Hello, everybody, and a very pleasant good afternoon to you, wherever you may be. This is Bruce Ash and Eb Wilkinson welcoming you to a special edition of Inside Track. I want to thank you, Eb, for filling in for me last week while I was participating in the Asians for Trump event in Phoenix. It was a great show that you did with Bob Branch on the Power of Fives and Inside Track contributor, national opinion maker, George Bardmesser, who talked about that crazy, creepy, sleepy Joe Biden. I know you wanted to. You wanted even more information.
We didn't get as far as I wanted to get. We barely discussed anything that I wanted to get to, but it was fascinating. Yeah.
Well, you did a good job. I listened to the show on the podcast, and you did a super job. Thanks. We have a great show for you again today. Our first guest this afternoon leading off the show will be Sean Fund to talk with us about the Missing in America project. You're going to be just blown away, which should be very dear to all Americans who have served or know or have family members who have served in our armed forces. Our guest to finish out the hour today is author and nationally recognized opinion maker Bradley C. Thompson. Thanks for supporting all of our Inside Track sponsors, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Eb and Gary, Corazon Cabinets, and Tucson Iron and Metal. That's Jamie and Kipper and her dad, Gary. These are great companies you should do business with. Speaking of great local companies you should do business with, as you know, Corazon Cabinets is your locally owned wholesale source for high-quality kitchen, bath, and office cabinets. Do you have a home improvement project planned for the new year? Corazon sells high-quality J&K, Yorktown, and Conestoga cabinets ready to install. Call Corazon Cabinets and schedule an appointment to visit the showroom. Call 488-2266. Tell Jennifer or Joy you heard this ad with Bruce on Inside Track and get an additional 5% discount on their already low prices. Before we get to Sean Fund, I want to report on three GOP events from the last week. First, locally, the Asians for Trump meetup I participated in last Saturday. Nearly 200 in attendance, all enthusiastically in support of President Trump's 2020 reelect. Why? Human rights abroad and prosperity at home. Promises made and promises kept. Asians in Arizona number over 170,000 and will definitely help Arizona stay red in 2020. On Wednesday, I attended my first White House Hanukkah party with my friend from Tucson Iron, Gary Kipper. Now, it's always a privilege to go to the White House. I love every opportunity I've had, but this was even more memorable because the president signed an executive order protecting Jewish college students who are being attacked by anti-Semitic gangs and discriminated against by campus administrators around the country. In one more sign of out-of-control vitriol, believe it or not, the New York Times attacked the president's executive order as divisive. Really? Supporting human rights is divisive? For who? Maybe we got Nazis running the New York Times? And Vanity Fair magazine called the president out for his remarks earlier in the week in front of a Jewish group for what they called his anti-Semitic language. Look, the left is apoplectic, spreading their lies as President Trump actually is thought of by many Jews as being the most supportive president ever. Prediction? Jewish support for the president's reelection may be the highest in the last 45 years. The last time Jews voted in the majority for any Republican president was 1972 with Richard Nixon. Speaking of the president's reelection and Trump derangement syndrome, Democrat socialists have sent articles of impeachment to the House floor next week for a vote on a straight party line basis. For the first time in history and only the third time in American history, the Congress has sent articles of impeachment for a floor vote with absolutely no bipartisan support. The president will survive this egregious attack, and American voters will see this for what it is, a partisan and coordinated attack, not just on President Trump, but the 63 million Americans who voted for him in 2016. Also in the past week, the U.S. Senate approved the 174th federal judge during the Trump administration. Democrat socialist desperation will cause them to pay for their antics in next year's election, the same way that the UK Labour Party paid for their behavior Thursday in an overwhelming slaughter by the Conservatives at the polls. John, let's go ahead and take our break. When we come back, Eb and I will visit with Sean Fund. You're listening to Inside Track. We will be right back.
Got it.
Welcome back to Inside Track. I am especially pleased to welcome Sean Fund, a man I have great respect for, especially due to an organization he leads here in Southern Arizona, the Missing in America Project. Sean also serves in national leadership within the organization as the National Laws and Information Chair. The purpose of the MIA Project, as it's also called, is to locate, identify, and inter the unclaimed cremated remains of American veterans through the joint efforts of private, state, and federal organizations to provide honor and respect to those who've served this country by securing a final resting place for these forgotten heroes. Welcome to Inside Track, Sean.
Thank you, Bruce. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Missing in America Project here in Southern Arizona.
The October 26th MIA Project ceremony, you led a sacred ceremony here in Tucson. Can you give us the after-action report?
We had 37 veterans that were slated for what we refer to our mission. Two were claimed by family members prior to the mission. We're always happy to do that. And 35 were subsequently interned in the Arizona Veterans Memorial Cemetery in Marana. So to make our listeners a little more familiar, we have a non-denominational service at the Adair Funeral Home on McGee and Northern. We have one of my jobs, if you will, is to hand out gloves so that people can carry the veterans' cremains. We do a flag line from the church, so when the ceremony is over, we actually escort them from inside the chapel out to the hearse through a flag line. And what I try and do is I always ask veterans who are in attendance. We have a variety of groups that attend, American Legion, combat vets. I don't want to try and name them all because I'll leave somebody out, but they're all present. And I try and get all the veterans who have never carried cremains before. I have seen men and women who have had adversity, who have felt that they were outside in their own kind of bubble when it came to their service. A lot of Vietnam veterans come to mind, where they don't think that the public is engaged in caring about them. And I've seen them, I've asked them to carry cremains, and I've seen them at the end, and I've seen grown men and women just break down, cry, because they realize that we are there for these veterans who have no representation, who should be honored for their service to our nation. And when they see everything that we do for the veterans, it just overwhelms them. I do it every time we have our mission. It's a reinforcement of what we try and accomplish. And it makes a big difference to individuals. So they go through the flag line. We place them in the hearse. We have escorts from, that's part of my position of being the law enforcement liaison for Missing in America Project. I coordinate all the traffic coordination between Oro Valley, Tucson Police Department, the Sheriff's Department here in Pima County, and DPS, and Marana. We were very fortunate. We had 11 motorcycles, part of their respective traffic units, give us an escort. We safely drove through the town, through Oro Valley to Marana. It's nice to see people pull over out of respect that they realize it's a funeral line. A lot of the guys on the motorcycles have flags and stuff waving. We've had anywhere from 100 to 150 motorcycles. And 30 or 40 cars. 300-400 people at one of our events, one of our missions, is not uncommon. So we get to the cemetery, if you will, and we have an honor guard from each respective branch of the service. They take over the cremains from that point. They're given, they're again walked through a flag line. They're placed on a dais along with flags for any of the family members who are in attendance. We have a ceremony. We usually have one or two speakers. I think the one thing everybody really appreciates is we do a missing man formation flyover.
That, yeah.
And that really goes over well with all the veterans in the crowd in attendance.
Sure. Wow.
We have one or two people who speak on behalf of Southern Arizona Missing in America Project about our mission. They have a rendering of the flag where they unfold the flag, and we do a gun salute. They do taps.
It's a full military.
It's a full military honors.
It's an honor guard is there.
And this is what our men and women who serve this nation deserve, and that's what we strive to accomplish each and every day. At the end of the ceremony, the honor guard takes those cremains, our veterans, and walks them down to the niches, and the niches are identified, and then they're placed in the niches. There's a final prayer. And sometimes when the American Sons of the American Revolution are present, they do a final salute with the black powder rifles, which is kind of neat. It's a very moving ceremony. But
you've been doing this since 2004 or 5?
2005.
So this isn't just sort of something that you've recently been in. I mean, this is really a passion for you and the others who are part of the project.
We all talk about how God places people in our path. And I think I was quite fortunate back in 2005. I was over at the donut shop on Ina and I-10, and I stopped and I got off and went for a cup of coffee, and I came back out and I saw these three or four veterans standing there, and they all had their patches on, their vests, and I walked over and I thanked them for their service. And one of the veterans engaged me in conversation, and talked about Missing in America Project, and I was hooked from like that moment on. I went to the first meeting, and I've been there ever since. I'm very fortunate in that Ed Torres is our coordinator for Southern Arizona Missing in America Project, and we have a group I want to also mention that's 100% volunteer. No one gets paid, all volunteer for all the different things we do. We're a 501c32. We take donations in from the public, but a lot of those funds go into, let's say, a Dare Funeral Home picks up the lion's share of the, and God bless them for the work that they've done with our organization. And Oasis Funeral Parlor is now coming online and doing a similar thing with us, but they have done the lion's share of getting the cremaine vessels, if you will. They do all the engraving for each veteran, and they're quite impressive.
I've seen on the news report back in October. These are very, very appropriate looking vessels that the warriors are in.
Yes,
this is at a high level.
And the occasionally you'll see someone who had Purple Heart, and the Purple Heart Society, what they do is they actually will affix a Purple Heart to that cremains vessel in honor of that individual's service to our country. The family during the ceremony, if I can back up for just a second, the family, if they're there, if we identify families through either the VA, Social Security, Ancestry.com, there are a lot of sources we go to try and identify, because a lot of these individuals are singles. But there are a lot of singles that have been estranged from their families for so long, the families unfortunately lose track. So a lot of times what has happened to date is we notify the family and we explain to them what we're going to render for their loved one. And then they turn around and say, you know what, we would like to attend the ceremony, but please go ahead and do that. So then we render them a flag, and they're presented with a flag during the ceremony. And for a lot of these people, it gives them closure. And it gives them a sense of relief, because they realize that their loved one is being given the honor and respect that they so dearly deserve.
So you're not getting paid for this?
No.
So this is strictly volunteer?
Correct.
So what do you do to provide for yourself in the meantime? What were you doing that you wandered into a donut shop and
saw
these guys?
My full-time job is I'm a detective with the Pima County Attorney's Office here in Tucson. It just so happens that I stopped while I was out doing my duty for the day and just bumped into these individuals. But I've been raised.
How appropriate at a donut shop.
At a donut shop. But I only
I didn't want to say anything.
I only came out with a cup of coffee, though.
Sean, if you don't know him, he's very tall, very rugged, and very trim. This is not a guy who spends a bunch of time at the donut shop.
Yeah.
But it is your involvement as law enforcement, as an investigator. Your job. You know, your day job is providing justice to people who have been killed in some cases or have been, you know, injured, affected in some fashion. But really, that's...
He's doing it the same way on a volunteer basis.
Yeah. In a sense, I've told people who ask me, you know, what do you do for the county attorney's office? And I said, well, we're the supportive arm for the court, if you will. We're the ones that go out and do additional investigations. We go locate victims. We identify other victims and or suspects. We basically are the go-to people to help the attorney get across the finish line with whatever respective case they're handling. And it can be a variety of things, anywhere from a minor burglary to a homicide. So it just depends what you get dropped on your desk, if you will, any particular day. We do have all detectives in our office who have specialities, who certain cases are given to them. But
you use your skills now from that office to help track down the loved ones.
Yes. It's like doing the same kind of investigatory work and outside my venue as a detective and doing it on my own time. And try and locate these people for the same really reasons. I got into law enforcement because I was raised to be a person of service, if you will, serve my community, my fellow man, and I have done that, I think, to the best of my ability, being involved with Southern Arizona Missing in America Project.
So give me an example of some of the ways that you'll track down relatives.
Okay, I'm going to give you an example that's current right now. So we have a nurse. Her name is Olive Anderson. She was a World War I, World War II nurse,
wow,
highly decorated by France and the United States for her service to our nation. What happened to Olive Anderson is that she was married twice. Both of her husbands were both highly decorated, both fought in some of the fiercest battles that America was engaged in. But what happened was she survived both men, and she died in her 90s in California, and unfortunately, no one knew of her background, and they buried her in a potter's grave. Hmm. So a gentleman by the name of Kevin Treadway, he is the chief of police of Flagstaff and here in Arizona. Hmm. We were introduced by Clyde Taylor. His nickname is Tex. He is the coordinator of Northern Arizona Missing in America Project. He introduced us. Kevin Treadway is one of those individuals who collects military memorabilia. Kevin had a whole folder that he purchased that had all of Olive Anderson's information.
My.
So between he and I, we started doing research, and I started making phone calls. So after a series of doing this, I have to tell you, the funny phone call was talking to the administrator, all due respect to them, in California. And after I explained to him, you buried someone in a potter's grave, they're a veteran, you can't do that. And she said, well, we're going to have to disinter her, then we're going to have to cremate her, then we're going to have to put her in another vessel, and then we're going to have to move her over to where her second husband is in the Rosecrans Cemetery in San Diego. Mm. She said to me, quite directly, who's going to pay for that? And I answered her over the phone quite directly. I said, well, who improperly buried her? And there was a pause. She understood where I was coming from, and they've been able to work out the details. We're waiting for a date and time right now where she'll be interred next to her second husband in the Rosecrans Cemetery. Our group will go, the Southern Arizona Southern California group will be in attendance, and it'll be a big day, especially for Kevin Treadway. He's very excited that we've been able to do this for Olive, and we'll all be quite relieved after we finally get her to her final resting place, because that's where she belongs, and she will get a full honorable burial when we reinter her.
Wow.
When she's buried again.
So ADARE helps cover some of these costs. Oasis now is involved.
Yes.
Individuals also can make gifts to the Missing in Action Project. How do they do that?
Missing in America Project, Southern Arizona. You can go on the our website and look at the information describing what we do in regard to Southern Arizona Missing in America Project, what our mission is. There are contact information there. But again, we're a 501c3 too. So the money we take in goes to the internments, can go to some of the research if it's necessary to pay for that, can go to equipment that we may use during the course of our mission, and any kind of incidentals that need to be paid for with regard to our veterans.
I noticed in the KUAT news article they did, one of the participants in that ceremony had attached to his motorcycle sort of an old-fashioned hearse.
Yes.
And I'm guessing there were some of the vessels that were there?
Yes. Brian is one of our volunteers, and Brian had created, he has a trike, a three-wheel, and he had created a hearse that looks like the birdcage from Tombstone, Arizona. Yeah, the only difference is it's encased in glass. And when we can, and when he's available, Brian is a trucker by trade. He deals in transportation. But when he can, he avails himself full services and transports all our veterans and their cremains to the cemetery during our ceremony and our mission.
So in the last couple of minutes or so, there have been 20,000 bodies that have been found, right? How many are still out there that do you think that haven't been identified and are sitting on a shelf someplace?
Our organization does a lot of work with the public fiduciary. So we also do a lot of work with law enforcement because there are individuals who die on the street, then go to the ME's office, and then somewhere along the line we get contacted by the public fiduciary and they identify them as a veteran, and then we kind of take over from there. The mortuaries and funeral parlors in town recently through legislation that was accomplished by first Ethan Orr and then Representative Todd Clodfelter enabled Southern Arizona Missing in America Project to release the funeral parlors, mortuaries, cemeteries from some of the liability that they were under the burden of experiencing. So if I go to them and they say we have, let's say, just as an example, 100 names in our crypt that these individuals have never been claimed, and we go through the list, and let's say we find 10 or 20 that are veterans, we become now the surrogate parent of those individuals, and we take full responsibility from them. What that allows the funeral parlor or cemetery or whatever to circumvent any liability. It now turns all the liability over to us. The cemetery doesn't have to worry about relinquishing the cremains to us because we become, in a better sense of the word, the surrogate parent for that veteran when we recover them.
So, Sean, we're up against a break. What you do is godly work. What all the volunteers do here is godly work. And it is a very, very important thing to our entire community, not just to the armed forces community. I can't tell you how much respect I have for what you do. This is a wonderful thing that you're involved in.
I appreciate that greatly, Bruce. I work with a great amount of talented and professional people, and we're all, our mindset is the same. It's not about us, about individuals, it's about the veteran, and that's where the heart of this mission and our group is.
Missing in America Project, look them up online. You can make gifts through PayPal. It's easy to do. I encourage you in the Christmas season, this is a great thing to do before the end of the year. Merry Christmas to you and Adriana. Thanks for both of you coming into the studio. John, let's go ahead and go to break. You're listening to Inside Track. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Track. Bruce Ash, along with Eb Wilkinson. Our guest through the remainder of the show today is Bradley Thompson. He is the BB&T Research Professor in the Department of Political Science at Clemson University and the Executive Director of the Clemson Institute for Study Capitalism, or for the Study of Capitalism. He received his PhD at Brown University That's a little suspect, Bradley. And he's been a visiting scholar at Princeton and Harvard universities, also at the University of London. His current book, The Ideological Origins of the American Constitution, is out and available at bookstores and online. He has lectured around the country on education reform, and his opinion pieces have appeared in scores of newspapers in the U.S. and abroad. Welcome, sir. It's about 70 degrees here in Arizona today. How's the weather where you are?
Hi, Bruce. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you and your audience. The weather here in Clemson, South Carolina is actually wonderful right now. It's not quite as warm as it is where you are, but it's a beautiful day.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to see we're sharing some nice weather. Dr. Thompson's most recent opinion piece appeared in USA Today, titled "Americanism Can Save Us from a Modern Civil War and Why." In your piece, you start by saying, "At one time, Americans were proud to be Americans and they liked each other, but today, neither is the case." How in the heck did this happen?
Well, it's a long process, and it would take the better part of several days to lay it all out for you. But very briefly, I think what has happened in this country beginning sometime in the 1960s, there developed in this country a kind of anti-American philosophy that sprung up on America's college campuses. And over the course of the last 40 or 50 years, it has percolated down and through American culture. I mean, and we see, the most obvious political manifestation of it is, you know, the views that Americans have over the presidency of Donald Trump and whether he should or should not be impeached. But in many ways, I would say that the impeachment is really just a sideshow, which is emblematic of, I think, much more fundamental subterranean battles that are taking place in American culture right now. And effectively, there are two Americas, I would say, and those two Americas are based on two very different political philosophies. I'd say one part of America believes in the principles of the Declaration of Independence, and so their philosophy would be, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they're endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, among which are the rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The other moral philosophy, which is competing with it, I think, is the philosophy which says, from each according to his ability, to each according to his need. That is to say, the philosophy of socialism. And these two ideas are in conflict with one another, and they are in contradiction. And this contradiction is being worked out culturally and socially in American life today.
So you're saying this started back in the 60s on college campuses. This is Ebb, by the way.
Yes.
With that being the case, are you saying that socialism started to infiltrate the college campuses back then?
Well, in fact, one could make a case that it was taking place well before the 1960s.
You bet.
It really took off in the 1960s, and I would say with every passing decade, those ideas are infiltrating more and more of our colleges and universities and more of the percentage of students in those colleges and universities. And so if you go on to a college campus today, I mean, the one thing that seems most clear, particularly in the humanities and social sciences, is the profound anti-Americanism that you see primarily amongst the professoriate and amongst students. And there is a kind of new totalitarian mindset that has engulfed American college campuses that is genuinely frightening, and I think is a sign of what's coming in the future.
So they enjoy the spoils of America and don't want to share it with anybody else, to include other Americans?
They do. What we have developed in this country is a new kind of ruling elite that simply views itself as both intellectually and socially superior to ordinary, everyday Americans. And I believe it's their view that they think the rest of America and Americans are ignorant rubes who need to be governed and controlled by the ruling elite.
Well, that's apparent with what's going on today in today's politics.
Well, I think it's very apparent, but I think in many ways, you know, politics is really just politics is downstream from culture, and culture is downstream from the ideas that are being produced in America's universities. And one of the truly frightening aspects of our culture today is the political violence that we are seeing from Charlottesville, Virginia, to Berkeley, California. Americans are taking now to the streets and fighting one another. And this is happening with greater regularity. And one of the most interesting things that I've noticed in the course of the last year is the increasing number of articles that I see on a regular basis that are calling for or describing what they call the coming civil war.
Yeah.
And I fear that we are increasingly moving in that direction. Now, whatever civil war that might occur in this country, it won't be anything like what occurred in 1861. But there is something happening in this country right now where there are two sides are clearly forming, and they're ready. And it's right now it's an intellectual and a political battle. But all intellectual and political battles eventually become social battles. And once that happens, then it's that's where it's taken to the streets, and that's when it becomes very frightening.
Well, it's being taken to the streets in Portland right now.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I mean, Portland's just like Berkeley, and it's not just Charlottesville, Berkeley, Portland. It's happening all over the country, right? I mean, just in the last 2 days, we've seen, if you've been following the news at all, a boy was savagely beaten on a school bus
for having a pro-Trump hat on.
Yeah, for wearing a red and white hat.
So Victor Davis Hanson says America is now nearing a point comparable to 1860. Do you think things are as bad as Dr. Davis believes? I mean, the polls would reflect it. He talks about, you know, a possibility of a real problem in 5 years. Is Davis over-exaggerating?
I don't think he is. He is a very wise and prudent man, not given to hyperbole or exaggeration. And so while it's unclear to me how long it will take or when it will happen, I do genuinely fear that we are moving in the direction of a coming conflict. What that conflict is and the form that it'll take, I don't know. But I do believe that things are going to get worse before they get better.
So this is a conservative talk show that you're participating in, and I consider myself to be a conservative, and I think Eb does as well. We're headed toward the 2020 election, and of course I'm working on behalf of the president to help in his reelect, and Eb's very supportive also. Perhaps you are. You don't need to announce, you know, where your allegiances are, but this 2020 election is going to be an election, but there is going to be warfare that is sort of, both sides are going to weaponize this election in a way that maybe we've never seen before, don't you think?
Well, I definitely think that's the case. And I think if Trump wins, there's going to be a lot of violence. And if Trump loses, I think there could be violence. But even worse than all of that, the long-term fear that I have is a kind of coming totalitarianism. The universities are the bellwether for what eventually is going to happen in our culture, right? Because ideas do have consequences. And so the ideas that are taking place on America's college campuses will eventually percolate down and through the culture. And right now, there is a kind of totalitarian mindset on our campuses. And that's my greatest fear would be the ultimate long-term victory of that kind of totalitarian mindset.
So how do we change that?
Well, I think the only way we change it is through ideas, right? Those ideas were not always on America's college campuses and in our government schools. They are a 20th century phenomenon. They didn't exist before that. And so what I would say conservatives, libertarians, classical liberals, and objectivists have to do is they have to recapture the moral high ground in this country. And unfortunately, too many people over the course of, I'd say, the last 50 years have been too willing to compromise core moral principles with the left. And you can't do that. Just take the issue of health care, for instance. It was the George W. Bush administration that gave us the prescription drug bill, right? The largest advance of the welfare state since the 1960s. And how did that happen? It happened because conservatives, so-called, failed to confront the left on the question of whether health care is a right or not. Right, and they just said, "Yes, healthcare is a right. We can just deliver it more efficiently than you can."
I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, once you concede the moral high ground, the argument is lost, and that's been the problem, right? We have captured the economic high ground. Nobody argues that socialism is more productive and more efficient than capitalism. Everybody, including the left, understands that capitalism is more productive and efficient. In fact, even Karl Marx in the Communist Manifesto made that very argument. The problem with capitalism from Marx's perspective and that of his descendants is that capitalism is immoral and unjust. But the problem is, so they captured the moral high ground, we captured the economic high ground, but in any battle of ideas between morality and economics, over the long term, morality always wins. And so we need to stop, trying to engage the left on economic grounds, arguing that we can produce better widgets than under capitalism than they can under socialism. And we need to directly assault the moral high ground that they have held for 150 years. That's what we need to do, and that is precisely what our side has failed to do.
Where do you see Trump in this? Because he's been the great interrupter for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think Trump is mixed. I mean, so on the one hand, I would say that the very best thing that he has done can be just summed up in two phrases: the deep state and drain the swamp. I think his identification and subsequent attack on what he calls the deep state has been a genuine contribution to promoting liberty in this country. Some of his other and his deregulation of some aspects of the economy and lowering taxes, that's all for the good. Some other things I'm
calling
not so
out
sure.
The press.
I'm sorry?
Calling out the press?
Oh, absolutely. Calling out the press, right? The press is it's fake news doing fake history. So he's been very good on that. Other things I'm not convinced that he's increasing the principles of a free society, like in his trade policies. But I'm waiting to see.
That's a work in progress.
How that all pans out.
So the money line from your recent op-ed in USA Today, I think, was you talk about the importance of rediscovering American principles and Americanism as a solution to what we've been discussed, this divide that exists. So how exactly would you propose that look like?
Well, if I can promote my new book.
I'd like you to.
Yeah, if I could just, I'm sorry to do this, if I could just correct the title. The title of my new book is actually America's Revolutionary Mind, a moral history of the American Revolution and the Declaration that defined it. And it's a book on the philosophy of the Declaration of Independence and more broadly on the philosophy of the American founding period. And in that book, I identify the core principles, not only of the Revolution and the Declaration, but the core principles of what I think America is and stands for, which I sum up in that op-ed that was in USA Today as the philosophy of Americanism. America is the only nation in the world that is identified as an ism, right? That is to say, it's identified with certain ideas and principles. There is no Frenchism or Germanism or Persianism, but there is something called Americanism. And I identify and associate the principles of Americanism with the principles of the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration lays out four self-evident truths, and I think those four truths are the four pillars of American society. And I hope if I can get my book, America's Revolutionary Mind, in the hands of enough people, that it will educate Americans on what our true principles are, and provide them essentially with an alternative education from what certainly college students are getting in their classes today.
Well, Bradley, I have a copy of that book, and my goal is to have that read by the end of this year. And at some point in January, February, love to have you back on and discuss it.
In depth.
I will read it cover to cover.
Beautiful. I'd love for you to read it, and I'd doubly love for you to have me back on to talk about it.
So you say that Americanism, despite all of our differences, all men and women are equally free, morally sovereign, and self-governing. You say that this philosophy inspired hundreds of millions of people from around the world to immigrate to America. But we're at where we're at in this divide in our country. Do you think mass immigration has helped create this divide? Because sometimes these people bring with them some of the worst things from the cultures they left? Or is this something that's really homegrown that has caused this divide within America?
Well, unless you're coming from Venezuela or from Iran, I don't think that the ideas or cultures that you're bringing to the United States are any worse than the ideas that are being taught in America's colleges and universities. That's the real source of the problem. I honestly think that the immigration issue pales in comparison to what's being taught in our universities. The corruption is not external. The corruption is internal, right? And so rather than putting a Band-Aid on a cut, what we ought to be doing is identifying the real source of the problem. I mean, if you had an entirely different philosophy being taught in America's universities, which therefore means in America's government schools, K through 12, then the immigration problem in this country would take on a very different hue, I believe.
Mm. Well, I didn't wish to suggest that immigration has places where we're at today, but there's also plenty of homegrown discontent. I'm sure you'd agree with that.
Homegrown discontent in what do you mean, in what way?
In terms of, you know, sort of socialism versus capitalism is a homegrown issue here among citizens who come at this country from a different direction.
Yeah, but what I find is that most immigrants who come to this country come, for the most part, I think, for the right reasons.
Right.
I will tell you, I'm an immigrant to the United States. And I came here because when I was 7 years old, living in Ontario, Canada, I read a book called The How and Why Wonder Book of the American Revolution. And from that moment, from the time I was 7 years old, I knew that I was an American born in the wrong country. And so I came here to this country, as I know, tens of millions of people have come to this country because of the principles on which this country was founded. And so, as I said, our greatest task is, in fact, to transcend those principles from the nattering nabobs of discontent who genuinely hate those principles.
Well, Dr. Thompson, we're going to have to leave it for now. You can see Dr. Thompson online, various interviews and so on, his book, America's Revolutionary Mind. It's by Encounter Books. It's available Amazon and in bookstores. Dr. Thompson, thanks very much, and Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you so much, and Merry Christmas to you and all your listeners.
You bet. Please support our great Inside Track advertisers, Imus Wilkinson Asset Management, Tucson Iron and Metal Retail, and Corazon Cabinets. Each of these great companies are well-run, local family businesses. All the profits stay here in Tucson to help our community. I know each of these owners, they love our hometown and they deserve our support. Inside Track will return next week with a special show as we go into Christmas and the new year. This is Bruce Ash
and Eb Wilkinson
rooting for a Wildcat basketball victory tonight and wishing you all a very pleasant good afternoon and a Merry Christmas.